Roger Hayman was a thorn in the side of most governments that sailed the Atlantic in the last decade of the 1700s. He belonged to that long, glorious, but criminal profession that Hollywood has helped us love, pirates. And Roger Hayman was good at what he did. Through the years, his fleet grew in size. We like to imagine pirates sailing the high seas in one lonely ship, black flag hanging from the mast, and a crew of rejects and drunkards patrolling the deck. Hayman's crew, though, was enormous. By 1799, he controlled 15 ships, and, as you can imagine, had become too big of a problem to ignore. In late February of 1800, Hayman and his fleet were sailing the waters off the coast of Haiti when they spotted four ships. Not just ships, though. No, these were warships. Three American, one British. And it wasn't a random encounter. The navies of both countries had set aside their differences and combined forces for the express purpose of putting an end to Roger Hayman's reign of terror. There was a battle. I won't get into the minutiae of who did what, but there are a few important things you need to know. First, while the bulk of Roger's fleet attacked the three American ships, Roger's own vessel tied on alongside the British ship. His men climbed over and made quick work of the English soldiers there. If the full battle proceeded in the same manner, they were sure to win the day. Second, Roger's men searched the British ship and found two chests of newly minted gold coins. Reports say that they were dated with years ranging from 1794 to 1799, and that it was payroll for the men aboard the ship. Roger, being a pirate after all, did what pirates do best. He took the gold. Third, after returning to his own ship with the gold, Roger came under heavy fire. One of the American vessels came alongside them and battle broke out. Roger wasn't the sort of man to back down, but after his 12th wound, he found himself unable to command his own fleet. And that's when the battle fell apart. Roger commanded a retreat. Some of his ships had already been sunk, and more were destroyed as they sailed away. Of the two that remained afloat, the Americans managed to capture one of them. But it wasn't Roger's ship. He, against all odds, had managed to slip away. Roger, though, was badly wounded and made straight for England. His wife and children were in Liverpool, and he thought if anyone would help him and tend to his injuries with care, it would be them. It was a long journey, though, and he failed to improve along the way, which made it all the more bitter when he stumbled down the street to his home, only to discover that his family had moved. Neighbors told him that his wife and children had actually packed up and moved to America. And even though it must have been an exhausting proposition, Roger boarded yet one more ship to cross the Atlantic one final time. He brought supplies for his travels and two large chests. Chests, mind you, full of British gold. Hayman didn't improve. In fact, his health declined daily as the ship crossed the cold Atlantic. All the while, he was watched by two men, Stearns Compton and one Dr. Griffin. These men, you see, recognized Hayman, and they had watched as porters had loaded the unusually heavy chests onto the ship. They weren't fooled. They knew what was in those chests. By the time the ship arrived at its first American port, the town of Newburyport on the northern tip of Massachusetts, Hayman was dead. So Compton and Griffin hatched a plan. Find a location nearby that was safe from prying eyes, hide the gold there, and then let the memory of Roger Hayman and his British gold slowly dissipate like smoke. They planned to return in 5 years and claim their reward. And that's just what they did. Once the ship was docked, both men left and looked for the right spot. Then, when they were sure they'd found it, they rented a sturdy cart and a pair of workhorses and returned to the ship. There, they moved the gold into canvas bags, loaded them into the cart, and headed south. Their hiding spot, according to local legend, was Kent's Island. It's not really an island, it's just a sliver of land between two rivers near the towns of Newbury and Byfield. It's marshy, which means that the ground is soft and wet and has a tendency to shift over time. I don't think Compton and Griffin knew that. All they understood was that there was a large boulder near the Parker River, and it made for a good landmark. So they buried it there, marking the boulder with a letter A. We know this because a local boy just happened to be hiding in the tree when they did it. Howard notes had watched them dig the hole, place the heavy sacks inside it, and then cover it back up. And when they were gone, he climbed down and went home, where he proceeded to tell his parents about it. A happy ending would be that they believed him and dug it all back up and lived a wealthy and comfortable life. But life doesn't guarantee a happy ending, and that certainly didn't happen to the boy's family. Instead, his parents decided he was lying, and they punished him for it. In doing so, they missed out on a fortune and everything that could have come with it. It's sad, isn't it? Pirates, adventures on the high seas, naval battles, and stolen gold, and all of it was skipped over by two parents who failed to trust their son. Compton and Griffin, though, well, they missed out as well. For whatever reason, they failed to return to Kent's Island and dig up the sacks they buried in 1800. Young Howard, though, never stopped telling his story. And his story often has a way of doing. It spread. Countless locals dug around that boulder, but no one ever found a single coin. Maybe it was the wet, marshy ground. Maybe it was a flaw in the boy's memory of that day. No one knows. In 1932, a local laborer named Chauncey Braden stopped in the nearby town of Salisbury to buy some supplies. Braden was known throughout Newbury as a poor man, but a hard worker, and he'd recently been helping a farmer dig a well near Parker River, quite close, by the way, to a large boulder. The shopkeeper in Salisbury said that Braden came in and bought an enormous amount of goods and had them all loaded into his wagon. When he paid, the shopkeeper said the poor laborer reached into his pocket and handed over a stack of coins. Gold coins, in fact, each stamped with the same date, 1794.